You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
We'll put it all on the show.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, sometimes in duplicate. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm Jane from London.
I am Matt from Tennessee.
Matt from Tennessee. Oh, and by the way, tonight's episode is Realm of Fear. Matt, how have you been?
I've been doing good.
Yeah?
Weather's been awfully hot here, so we're just trying to stay cool. But other than that, things have been going pretty smoothly around here.
Okay. And I hope you're able to stay on with us for a while, because usual our conversational digressions happen. But now, James is back from Star Trek Las Vegas, so I wasn't able to go. I wish I could have, but I couldn't. There's no way I could have even got there. Job change and everything, it's hell. So we're gonna. I want to talk about Star Trek to Las Vegas, and here's something I want to bring up, James.
Okay, go on.
Was Nichelle Nichols there this year?
Yes, she was. Yeah.
How was she?
So let me just rewind for 1 second. You just said, "Oh, James is back from Star Trek Las Vegas." I've been back for over a month now.
I know,
and
but
my goodness, that goes quick.
It does go quick.
You know, not only am I back now, but
fourth wall.
I'm afraid so. Not only that, but this week the kids went back to school in England, and that's at the beginning of September. And holiday feels like a million years ago. So Nichelle Nichols was there. So she did not appear on stage, and she didn't speak, as far as I'm aware. At least I didn't get to see her, and I don't think anything was advertised with her in. There might have been a panel that I missed or something like that, but I don't think so. She was in the sellers room, where they have kind of like all of the typically they have all of the merchandise, and then on the side they will have people sit in, send in autographs, and I don't know if they have photos, or at least they have selfies available. And I walked past her with the wife, and I was kind of, you know, prodding her and pointing everyone out, you know, as we walk past Iris Stephen Bear, and I'm saying, "That's the guy that did Deep Space Nine." And she's like, mm-hmm. "You what? Deep Space Nine is a Star Trek show. You what?" So I did point her towards Uhura, or, you know, Nichelle Nichols, mm-hmm. and then she asked me, "Why is no one queuing up for her?" Which was really, it was a very sad moment, because she didn't have anyone with her at that mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. But having said that, right, Nichelle Nichols is a regular of the circuit scene, regular of the convention circuit, and she comes around a lot. Whereas it was the first year for people from the, you know, from the Discovery show, and there were huge lines for those guys, in particular Jason Isaacs.
Okay, well, I was just curious how she was doing, because as you know, recently they've put out that she is suffering from dementia. And I hate to say this again, but 2 years ago in Star Trek Las Vegas, I said that. Just the way she was acting. It's not like I know her in real life, but just the way she was talking, that there was something was wrong. And so they've now confirmed that I don't know what's going to happen with her, but we wish her the best. Absolutely. So, tell me something. Now, 2 years ago, you bought something nice and expensive, didn't you?
No. Did I?
I thought you were like calling your wife trying to get permission to buy something, a phaser. Well,
yeah, I tried to get her to. I didn't call her. I wouldn't. I didn't call her because, I mean, on one side, I'm going to now say that I wouldn't need to call her. Okay. But also on the other side, I'm not prepared to pay for international phone calls whilst I'm abroad. So on one hand, I'm going to come across as being really flash, and on the other hand, extremely tight. Mm-hmm. But I think it was the replica of the tricorder.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Which was really good, which I think the Roddenberry guys were selling. Mm-hmm. And actually, this year, again, they had a fairly decent kind of, you know, high quality stuff. Nothing was as nice in my opinion, but no, I never bought that. I mean, I'm not divorced, so no. I clearly didn't come home with a $500 tricorder.
No, but you did come home with the Tesla, which I'm still surprised came out pretty good. Okay.
No, she was okay with that.
But was it any cheaper this year?
What do you mean by cheaper?
Well, you know, over time, things lose their value a little bit, so that it seems like some things go down in price.
So, I didn't really, I mean, honestly, I didn't notice in terms of merchandise and other stuff like that. One thing that was noticeable, so, Lou, you know, you came with me and we went to the 50th anniversary in 2016. Mm-hmm. It was a lot quieter this year than 2 years ago. Mm. Now, I remember because we met up with Ben. I remember that Ben told us that, you know, 2016 was extremely busy and it was, you know, much more packed than normal. So I suspect that there was a 50th anniversary kind of bulge year that then reverted back to normal, or you know, maybe it's still continuing to grow. But I do think that the year that we were there together was certainly a bulge year. Because you could, you know, one thing that Ben noted is that he wasn't able to get weekend tickets on the day 2 years ago, whereas they still had them available this year.
Hmm. Oh, okay. All right, yeah, because I can tell you one thing that was run so much better than Dragon Con was. Dragon Con was an utter mess. It's just a mess. We had assigned seating, and we could still see the stage. We could still see all the video monitors around, so I liked what we had. But at Dragon Con, you have people lined up all the way around that place to get the best seat they can get. And it's just no fun when you have to line up hours in advance. Or if you don't, you may not even get a seat. So I like the way Las Vegas did it.
So I have to say that my previous experience was the Destination Star Treks that they ran. Actually, the two that I attended were in London. That was slightly more chaotic than what Vegas did, and Vegas with the assigned seating, and also, frankly, with the, you know, all of the talks that they do are free, so you don't have to pay additional to it other than the kind of like entry price for the weekend. I think that's a lot nicer, and I thought that there was never any pressure in order to kind of like squeeze people in. So the facilities was just so much larger. I think I've decided to go over to Star Trek, the UK Star Trek convention in Birmingham this year, which I believe is in October. I think I've decided to go to that. I am not quite yet sure, but I don't think it's as well run as Vegas.
No, I've... And, you know, the other Star Trek convention I've went to in the past was Starbase Indy, Indianapolis convention, and it's so small there that, you know, the actors, they sit in tables in the hallway, and you could walk up and talk to them. I mean, it's just not chaotic, but it's smaller, and it's more intimate. And I remember going out with the Garrett Wong as he was smoking. He'd go out with a bunch of people, would all stand out there and talk as he, you know, to the smoking area. So that's kind of place Starbase Indy is, so.
What? Harry Kim's a smoker. He doesn't come across as a smoker.
Well, he does. He did. Oh. He never got promoted. That's the problem. You know, he had to cope with the stress.
Well, perhaps. Yes, perhaps. Mm-hmm.
So it makes you wonder if people in the 24th century will use the e-cigarette now.
Some type of, well, I mean, there must be a synthetic, synthahole-like replacement.
Either that or the H-cigarette, the holographic cigarette. Anyway. What's that?
Well, I wish I could have gone, to Las Vegas. I have not been to a Star Trek convention since 1994, so...
Wow, 1994.
I don't have much to compare it to.
All right. Well, before I went to my
first remember one, it was in Syracuse, New York, and the guest that year was Renee Auberjonois. It was right after DS9 season 2, and somebody had asked him question about whether or not he wanted to, Odo to end.
There we go. And you just caught up. I'm getting a real bad time lag with you. Everything's coming in and out really, really badly.
Okay. You want me to hang up and try to reconnect?
No, never.
But it's you're dropping a lot of packets. That's the problem. And some of the things you're saying ain't coming through.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you have other things going on back there. I don't know, James. So, what did you hear?
It was garbled, unfortunately. But Matt, this is the point of the show where Lou tries to convince you to stop playing the three sessions of World of Warcraft.
There you go. That's
the one. I'll stop.
I'll just go down to the two, Lou.
Yeah, just the two. You can go without it for a while. Okay, anyway. Okay, so I want to tell a joke, and stop me if you've heard this one. And I'm not sure how this is going to go over without visual, but we'll try, okay? This guy is laying in a hospital bed with an oxygen mask over his face when a pretty nurse walks in. And he asks the question, "Are my testicles black?" She wasn't sure she heard that right, but she said, I'm not able to look at that. You're going to have to ask your doctor. So the next time she comes walking in, he asks the same question, "Are my testicles black?" "Sir, I have already told you, I can't look. You're going to have to ask your doctor." So the third time she comes walking in, again, "Are my testicles black?" Finally, she's had enough. She lifts his blanket, pulls up his gown, takes a look, and says, "No, sir, they look just fine." Finally, he removes his oxygen mask and says, "Listen very carefully. Are my test results back?"
That was more dangerous than I thought it was going to be when you said, "I have a joke, Lou."
So, anyway. Hopefully that translated good. I'll have to listen to this
one. Sure, where you were going with that.
Yeah, neither was I.
No kidding. Well, it's, I have to make sure that translated before I let that go out. Anyway. So, Realm of Fear in duplicate.
Yes, so we haven't mentioned yet that, unfortunately, we did try to record this show previously. About 10 days ago? Something like that, Lou?
I think it was that short ago? Oh, no.
I was thinking it was only like 4 days ago.
4 days ago?
Wasn't it Tuesday?
Let me think. I think it was July 27th.
Oh, when we recorded.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been hell here. So, yeah, we've been so far behind and screwed up.
And the plus side, your Star Trek 5 episode was excellent.
Oh yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I believe I even said up. At the end of last season that when we get to season 6, we're going to run this a little tighter.
So you're going to run what?
Run it a little tighter. You know,
oh, little, tighter.
Yeah, a little bit more controlled and on schedule.
So actually, so one thing I have to say, Lou, I don't know if I've made you aware of this yet, but I'm out of the country for 6 weeks next year. From around July through to September, I'm not here. And I think there was an opportunity for us to finish by then. I'm not entirely sure we're going to hit it.
You mean done with the show by July of next year? What, are you crazy?
Well, because there's only, you know, there's about another 50 episodes in it, and there's about, you know, probably about 40 weeks. So, you could tech, if we had a schedule, we could hit it.
That's disappointing. You used to be the more sane of this group. Now you seem to have lost your mind. Nope, not possible. I don't know. We could always try, but you know how it goes. So the synopsis for tonight's episode, as I get back into everything I was supposed to be doing, Lieutenant Barclay faces his fear of transporting, but now he thinks that he's being attacked by a creature inside the transporter beam. This is the second episode of Season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was first released on September 28th, 1992. It's written by Brannon Braga and directed by Cliff Bull. So that there alone should tell you this might be a pretty good episode. Guest stars for tonight's episode include Colm Meaney as Miles O'Brien, Pata Yasutake as Alyssa Ogawa. That I remember we talked about is how Japanese say their name. Alyssa Ogawa, Patty Yasutake, Dwight Schultz as Barclay, co-starring Renita Scott as Admiral, Thomas Bell Gray as a crew member, and of course, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this one? Okay, so basically what I remember saying is just like it reads, I'm not alone. It says I'm not alone. I don't know what that means, but I can't imagine ever wanting to enter a transporter that basically kills me and turns me into digital ones and zeros, and then on the other end makes an exact duplicate, even with the obvious scars on my right arm from when I went through a window as a child. The only reason transporters existed in the future is because it was too costly to land a ship every week, so they had to figure out something. And, of course, they took all that for granted until we come up with Dwight Schultz and Lieutenant Barclay. And I think he does an amazing job, not only forcing everyone to accept his fear, but in the end is able to save lives by facing his fear. So, I like this one. Matt, how about you? Let's go with you.
Well, like I said before, I like the Barclay episodes. I didn't so much watching them first run through when I was younger, but I find now watching them again, I get a better appreciation for what he was bringing to the show, kind of giving that taking our role in the show as if, you know, if we went from today to the future, you know, we would have all these faults and everything, whereas typically everybody else on the show is, you know, perfect. So, and so in this case, you know, specifically too, you know, we've had other people that have had their concerns about the transporters, you know, Dr. McCoy, Dr. Pulaski and all them, but, you know, they always grudgingly did it anyway and never really worried about it. But, you know, here we see somebody who has a genuine fear of it. And so it's kind of a nice thing to see. Like I said, you don't see it in the show very often. So, you know, for what they were trying to do, I think this was a good episode to do it. I thought it was pretty good, too.
Okay. And Doc?
So I remember having a distant memory of not liking this show and then moaning about it when we last spoke. But I actually just watched it, like, 90 minutes ago or so, or maybe not 90 minutes ago, because I think we've been rolling for a while before we started recording. And I really enjoyed it, like, you know, the fifth time round. I actually think that what happened, and unfortunately this is lost to the ages, but we had a conversation. You guys really softened me up to this. And then I, like, as I rewatched, I kind of felt, yeah, actually, it really isn't too bad. Now, having said all of this, I think it's probably one of the weaker Barkley episodes. I think it's that they are slightly retreading on ground that they visited before. I think that Barkley too often gets reset as a character. I mean, this won't be the last time they reset Barkley. They do that, you know, for example, in Pathfinder as well. So you always, you know, he kind of gets to the point where he overcomes his fears, and then he discovers he has new fears. But overall, I found it kind of, you know, pleasurable experience without any real objections.
Okay. All right.
But of course, none of this stuff about the transporter works. And I recall when we had the conversation last time, Lou, there was a big discussion about, I mean, I don't think transporters kill you. I think that's an unfair representation of what a transporter does.
Yeah, exactly. Because in this episode, it portrays a transporter in a way that makes absolutely no sense to me at all.
You mean because it violates the Heisenberg uncertainty principle?
Yeah, let's go with that. And if that means that you shouldn't be aware of being transported.
Yeah, no, it's not that.
Then I guess not. I mean, it all started go ahead.
But you are right. They mention, and I was listening out for this again when I watched it, rewatched today. They specifically mention about the theory class that Barkley takes, that they, you know, they mention about the scanner, and then they mention about you being converted into a whole load of zeros and ones. Now, what that effectively sounds like, it sounds like they look at you and they turn you into a data stream.
Yeah.
Now, if that is true, there's no real reason why, if you are going to be digitized and turned into a data stream, there's no reason why you should be built back up from the same matter, you know, even matter converted into energy, as which you sent out. So there's, if you are just data streaming it, you can. There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to have duplicates of people. So if it is just data, just start replicating people. Why not? Just do it time and time and time again. And in fact, I think that they kind of edged towards that area when they were talking about Picard coming back in Lonely Among Us. It's very much like we don't know. We have his pattern, but we don't have his energy. Well, let's go and get his energy from the cloud. Well, energy is kind of universal. It doesn't. It's not inherently different energy if it comes from a rock or if it comes from a human. So that part kind of doesn't make sense. But, you know, that's the theory that they say. But then what they show you is they show you Barkley walking around and being completely aware and breathing and performing actions and him being able to touch things, almost as if what they put you into is just a, you know, some type of pipe and they push you out the end kind of thing. It's shown as a transport mechanism, but it's described as a digitization. And those two things are inconsistent with each other.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Doc.
Hey, I apologize.
How do the Heisenberg compensators work?
Ah, well, I really hope that you are setting me up for this because they work very well.
Okay, you know, what's funny is I have no idea what you mean, and I'd like to actually know what you mean by that. Heisenberg composite. I got a feeling I'm probably going to go, oh yeah, crap. Okay, I get it. But no, I don't know what it means.
Okay, so the joke comes from, I believe it's an extra on one of these Star Trek DVDs where I don't recall who it was. I don't know whether it was the Rick Berman's or perhaps one of the writers or whoever.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It was Berman or someone, but I could be mistaken.
Or it actually might have been Andre Bermonis, you know, the kind of the science-y background dude. And what they do in this episode, and I think it's the first time they put it in this episode, but they mention about the Heisenberg compensators. Now, when they talk about digitizing an individual, it is not unreasonable to assume that you need to have accurate position and momentum for all of the particles that you're going to decompose into the data stream. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the problems is that under the rules of quantum mechanics, you are not allowed to determine those two measurements precisely, as in up to arbitrary accuracy, at the same time. So that's what's known as the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. So you can't measure someone's position and their speed with arbitrary accuracy. You can measure one of them extremely accurately, but you lose accuracy in the other. And this is just a consequence of the underlying equations that govern quantum mechanics. The Schrödinger's equation, etc., etc. So there is this Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It comes through the mathematical formulation of the theory. Now, they mention Heisenberg compensators, and it's a kind of a nod towards the fact that, yes, we know that one thing you would have to overcome is this Heisenberg uncertainty principle. So the idea is that someone wrote in the script that you have Heisenberg compensators to overcome the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. And the story goes is that one of the writers was phoned up and he said, okay then, smarty, well, how exactly do they work? And of course, he had no answer other than to say they work very well.
Just somehow they work. Okay. All right. Because remember the second movie, Star Trek movie, when they actually... Was it second one, Wrath of Khan, where they carry on a conversation while they're being transported?
Well, right. I mean, back from regular one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, right? The guy that has the rather unfortunate accident in the transporter suddenly screams through the transporter.
Through the whole thing. Right. Okay. Okay, so anyway, so here we go.
It is canon. It's not a new idea. We dealt with it before.
Yeah. Okay. So... We found the USS Yosemite who found themselves in a plasma stream or whatever that is. We can't tractor it out. We can't scan for life forms. Not even tiny little life forms. Not even precious little life forms, neither. But hey, why don't we transport there? And of course, it seems strange. You know, we could transport there, but we can't do anything else. So while we're there... And to get there, they have to merge the two transporter systems, which, that's great. How do you merge a transporter system on a second ship when there's nobody there to help you? But they do.
We do it remotely.
Yeah, that's TeamViewer in. That makes more sense. So they TeamViewer in, and they transport.
They had their access codes to take over.
Yes, exactly. Because every starship knows everybody else's access codes. So he came up with the idea, but he doesn't like the being in on the implementation of the idea. But he's going to be, you know, kind of face his fears. And he gets all the way on the transporter pad until he finds out, you know, what's really going on. You know, transitioning to this, and I'm doing this. And, Oh, okay, never mind. We got it. Of course, they had to come up with some kind of glitch just before he goes to transport so he can go, oh, screw this, and runs out of the room screaming all the way down the hallway.
One of my favorite moments of this episode is right there when, you know, they're explaining in the transporter room just how dangerous this will be, and Riker's like, yeah, this sounds great. Worf, you go first.
Yes. Yes, Worf, go first. If it goes wrong, bye-bye.
No, you're absolutely right. Although I mentioned this the last time we recorded, but Barclay's sitting there almost having a breakdown in front of everyone. You know, no one seems to notice. You know, not even the trained physician notices. Mm-hmm. Not even Geordi, who has filters on his visor that allows him to see people's heart rate and can tell whether or not someone's lying. And he can't seem to notice that this underling of him is sitting there in the corner, breathing slowly, trying to not to have a panic attack.
Having a panic attack.
Well, so did you think Geordi noticed, or do you think... did Geordi not notice, or did he not care?
Do you think Geordi cares?
I hope so. He's a... He seemed to care later on.
Yeah, but didn't we sort of already condemn him as a dick?
Nope,
sorry, folks. No, that wouldn't have been you, but still, he is a terrible boss.
Well, he even stole the idea at first. When they were talking about it down in engineering, Barclay comes up with the idea, and then he calls back up to the bridge and says, I think I know how to do this.
Well, yeah, probably because Picard wouldn't want to hear anything Barclay has to say. I don't know. Okay. Well, anyway. But now we find out he has a transporter psychosis, is what they've... I guess a counselor has... I don't know what he diagnosed him to be, transporter psychosis. So let's talk about Starfleet policy. Barclay later says his career would be over if he can't transport. Do we believe that's true, or is there reasonable accommodations for a transporter phobia?
I think reasonable accommodations should be able to be made. And I think, you know, he has been out on away missions before, and maybe he kind of tries his best to avoid things. But I'm sort of the opinion that Barclay must have used the transporter. It's just that, he would rather not. You know, a bit like McCoy and Pulaski and stuff. And in this particular case, it was heightened. You know, there are heightened circumstances. So I'm sure he would have been fine. And actually, to be honest with you, I think a lot of people that will quote that, you know, their career would be over if, that generally exaggerated. And I would even suggest that that's true of modern day life now. You know, people who reckon their career would be over if they, if their workmates knew that they were gay, or if they had to take a week off in order to care for their mum, or anything like that. So I think it's just a little bit of paranoia speaking.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, I even mentioned that we have an entire series based on the fact that the entire crew refused to ever set foot on that until there was emergencies that happened. And then as each emergency happened and they had to beam out, they've suddenly realized that, hey, it's pretty safe. And started using it. But I don't know. It's okay.
So you mean what? You mean Enterprise?
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't Archer get beamed in the first episode of Enterprise?
He does.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, they still won't use it for how many seasons, too?
Well, I think by the end, it's like, you know, that beam out of...
Oh, yeah.
That beaming everywhere. Out of everywhere.
Yeah. But they
right.
would still...
But to begin with, right, that it was only as a last resort. They tried not to use it if they didn't have to.
Right.
I mean, it would have been nice had, like, you know, a couple of the guys in Enterprise actually started developing problems due to the transporter. Like, you know, severe problems that meant that they all died young. I mean, maybe I'm being too morbid here.
Or they started growing a third limb or some kind of strange thing happened.
Well, there was the one episode where the person was beamed up during the middle of a storm, and when they materialized, they had like leaves and twigs and everything integrated into their body.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was funny. That was cool. So to speak, you know. Okay.
So it wasn't without its flaws.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so they can desensitize him from this type of fear. And the best way to try is, do you remember?
Well, it's about poking yourself in the back of the ear. But
yeah,
actually,
flexing.
One thing, just very quickly about Enterprise. And I'm sorry, this is a slight tangential anecdote from Star Trek Las Vegas. So Lieutenant Reed on Enterprise, played by the Brit Dominic Keaton, and I have to say that as a Brit, I watched Enterprise to begin with, and I kind of thought, oh, it's such a shame they've got that guy doing such a horrendous British accent. Because I honestly thought that he was faking it. He sounded nothing like an English person would sound. And I don't know if they were like forcing him to sound fake because that's what the American like producers thought an English person sounded like, or whether it's just that I've got my ears completely wrong.
Yeah.
But so he was at Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, he looks well for his age.
Mm.
Do you know how old he is now?
Mm.
He honestly looks no different to how he did in Enterprise. He's 56. He was mentioning, because he had a talk then, his talk was actually quite nice. He was talking about his family and how his dad died relatively young. And then he also brought up his age. And it was astonishing. You connect to the characters as they were in the series, and sometimes you're slightly blinded to the fact that now, Shatner's in his mid-80s, and you think of them of how they were. And even if you're thinking about him, how he was in The Undiscovered Country, that's still in like 25 years ago, or more, maybe. I thought he looked astonishing for his age. Anyway, tangent over.
That's okay. Tangent all
you I always think the same thing when I see Patrick Stewart. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like he's aged a day since the mid-80s.
I think that was true up until about 5 years ago, and I'm going to get a lot of hate for that. And of course, by the way, at Vegas, they did mention that they've got the new series coming up, the series with Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I heard that.
So it's not exactly clear what it's going to be, but it does look like Captain Picard, or at least Jean-Luc Picard, is back. And by the way, there was no announcement of this preemptively. There was. On the day, they basically said, "Hey, come to the place around. I think it was like noon or 11 o'clock or something like that. Come here. There's going to be an announcement. There's Alex Kurtzman's going to be there." And then he came out and said, "Hey, I've got a couple of things to say about a new TV show that we're going to develop for Star Trek, and I'm not going to say much. I'll let this guy talk instead." And Patrick Stewart walks out on stage. And it just erupted, and no one was expecting it, and certainly no one saw him in advance.
That's and by interesting. Way,
and the greatest thing that I saw on Twitter was a Brent Spiner who was at Star Trek Vegas, I think the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He tweeted out, "So unfortunately, I had to leave Vegas on Friday night. Anything interesting happen?"
Oh. Yeah, because he had no idea what was going on, right?
Well, I think by that point he did, but
oh yeah,
it was a nice wind up.
That's cool. I mean, yeah, I can't wait to see the speculation on what kind of episode, what kind of series Patrick Stewart's gonna have. Anyway,
Plexing
series. So Plexing. It sounds like crap.
It's just a distraction, right? That's what it is.
Okay. Well,
now I'm under the impression that Barclay went straight from the transporter room directly to Troy's office. Was that the impression you guys got?
Probably.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether or not Troy was in the office at that point. I think he was certainly waiting for her.
Or she was waiting for him.
Because I thought it was interesting that Troy would have just been there with nothing to do at that particular time.
Well, what else is there for her to do?
Good point.
Yeah. Plexing. So, I don't know. Why don't you just teach him masturbating?
Less socially acceptable on the bus.
I suppose so. Yes, that's true. That is true.
I do like the continuity because Troy says that it's a Betazoid relaxation technique, and there are episodes later on where you actually see her doing it. Calm herself down.
Yeah. Like when her mother shows up or something?
I think so. Probably.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. Commander, what's Barclay doing? Oh, never mind. He's just masturbating. He's tense. So, O'Brien relates to Barclay, because he understands his fear. Oh, no, he's not afraid of the transport. No, that's great. You're afraid of transporting? Really? Do you think maybe the transporter chief just hates to transport? No, that can't be it. No, he's afraid of spiders.
But so if you think about it, though, I do think the if you were afraid of transporter, it's unlikely that the transporter chief will be asked to transport himself places a lot, right?
Oh, I bet you he tests the system all the time. I bet you he's a guinea pig for the transporter system. Because it's part of his job.
No, I mean, but he's not a tester, right? It's like if you're a mechanic or an engineer, you don't drive the car yourself. You get someone else to do that and to give feedback. You're on the opposite side. The people that design planes don't fly the planes.
No.
So I would imagine that. I mean, yeah, we did see O'Brien being transported a lot, especially in DS9, because he got promoted and he had other things to do. But if you think about his job is just to stand there and make sure that everyone else gets either beamed over or beamed back. He has no skills. I mean, having said that, right? He did beam down in power play and make sure the transporter pattern enhancers went down and things like that. So yeah, he does do other things, but generally he is in his office or in his little room.
Yeah, in the transporter, waiting for something to do. And I believe was one of our discussions on the Lou Trek show: is what does a transporter chief do when nobody's transporting? And I think we may have given him a lot of things that he does, but I don't remember.
So are you aware of, I mean, there is an O'Brien at Work book that is pretty cool. That basically just has him. It's made out as a comic, and he's just sitting there, and he's just standing there for like 3 or 4 panes before Picard.
I've got a thumbnail here right now. It's chiefobrienatwork.com.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds right.
That is pretty cool. I mean, I'd like to see what it is he does when nobody's going anywhere. So he had a fear of spiders because, he had to save a ship and he had to crawl into a spider web or whatever it was. And if he didn't get it done in time, they would have all died. And sure enough, he tackled this fear, climbed right in and saved everybody. So now he has a pet spider named Christina. What was her name?
Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But I mentioned this last time, but when they have the conversation and Barclay comes in and he said, "Oh, I'm afraid of transporting," and then O'Brien says, "Oh, yes, I know," and then Barclay has a bit of a moment where he thinks, "Oh, are you afraid too?" And O'Brien looks at him and goes, "What? Our transporters? No, baby, I'm afraid of spiders."
I mean, that's not like a that bad. Come on,
that's like a proper phobia. Transport? No.
Yeah, that is funny though. So anyway,
well, luckily for Barclay, O'Brien's been working it out. So now it'll be a smooth ride going over instead of the rough ride he had warned about earlier.
Right. Yeah, and he decides he's going to tackle that fear and just go, because he can do it. I think I can. I'll just tap the back of my ear, and then I know I can. Okay, so he finally heads on over, and Geordi's like, "Hey, Bark, you're here. I knew you could do it. Okay, let's go to work."
That's actually one of my favorite parts of the show, too, is nobody, when he got there, nobody gave him any grief about flaking out in the transporter room or anything. It was just, everyone was just, "Hey, glad you're here," chastising him for having the issue.
Yeah. We knew you could do it. See, just listen to us next time. And then there was a bit about the Cardassians that might have attacked the ship, but that just kind of fizzled out right quick. So there was even no need to bring it up. All right. So the away team is ready to beam back, and they return one by one just the same. and Barclay's the last to return. And during the transport, he sees something that not only floats in the matter stream, but actually bites his arm. And for a second, do you remember if he reported it to LaForge instantly, or kind of like slept on it for a day or so?
No. He sleeps on it. He sleeps on it until he even has the symptoms of the illness, right? When it starts glowing and things. Okay. It's the following day where he comes over and he does a bit of the Lieutenant. Do you ever see things? And it's like, yeah. See a lot of things. Okay. Did I ever bite you? Were you bitten in a transporter? No. So he's very kind of tentative.
Well, the question he asked LaForge was, have you ever had anything strange happen to you during transport? And Geordi seems to have forgotten very recently where he was phased out of, phased out of sync with the rest of the universe just fairly recently, but no, he has no recollection of anything ever strange happening when he was transported.
Yeah. But also, I remember that, I don't think it was O'Brien that was there in theory, where they lost the Vulcan ambassador. But they did lose the Vulcan ambassador not that long ago. And I know that in the end it was proven that it wasn't actually a transporter accident, but it was the fact that she was a Romulan trying to get back home, etc. So fine. But the fact that they were able to use a transporter accident as cover suggests that it's not exactly a one-in-a-generation event that will be so so mind-blowing that it's going to have, all of the engineers looking over it through with a fine-tooth comb, right? You don't knock someone. If you need to kill someone, you don't knock them out in the most mysterious way possible. They can only attract attention. So to me, it sounded like, up until this episode, transporter malfunctions, as far as I could tell, they were pretty common.
Really? Yeah. I would think there'd be accidents all over, at least at the beginning. But yeah, he makes it seem like transporting is the safest way to go.
I mean, no transport has ever turned a doggy into two doggies, one of which is bad, one of which is good. Never happened, right?
Right. Or turned, two doggies into one doggy.
And in a couple of years, we get Tuvix, and the transporter is like a death trap. It clearly is a death trap.
Well, that's what I've been trying to tell you, man. I don't want to transport. So, anyway. Okay. Oh, because here's another question then. If somebody dies, why can't you just take his last pattern, put the dead body through, and bring him back as his last pattern?
No thinky.
No thinky, huh?
Okay. That kind of technology changes everything to the extent that you remove all drama in the world, right? It just disappears.
I think you have to assume that the computer doesn't have the storage space to remember everybody's pattern. So, it's got like a trash bin file. The patterns go eventually after some. When you wait too long, that pattern you can't get back anymore because other people have gone through.
So it's basically the thing that's preventing immortality in the 24th century is lack of cloud storage. But that's basically it.
Yes. It's exactly.
Got to be it. Yes. Well, it makes sense. That's the reason why they needed Pulaski's brush, because it didn't have her hair follicles on file. Okay.
Well, let's see. Remember in that episode, they didn't have any transporter record of her whatsoever. That was the whole problem.
True. Yes. You're right. She never used a transporter? Well, you'd be surprised. Because he even said, you said earlier that you're sure he's used a transporter. I actually got the impression that he's never been in it. Because he even says, you'd be surprised how I was able to get around it and how many hours I've logged in a shuttle.
well, he technically got transported at the beginning of the nth degree, because he got knocked out by the flash of light, and then they beamed him back to the Enterprise.
Right.
But he was out cold.
Yeah, that's true. So he doesn't even know how he got back.
Yeah. Or what Geordi did to him when he was out cold.
Oh, right. Yeah, can you imagine during this episode, he says, I've never transported. Oh, well, I hate to tell you this, but do you remember a while back when you were knocked out when that thing, flash of light, knocked you out? We transported you. Because then, he'd be like, you what? Oh, no, I'm not even me no more. Anyway, that'd be great. I'm not even me no more. So,
as if he doesn't have enough issues to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're playing.
But Geordi.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but Geordi does mention. I think this is the point where he makes a comment that for all the problems that transporters used to have, it's been perfected now, where he actually uses the words, it is the safest way to travel.
Yeah.
I think that brings up the you know, that's the kind of feeling that air travel is, you know, today, where, you know, sure, there are crashes every once in a while, but statistically speaking, there's no better, more safer way to travel than this way. So they're definitely trying to draw the parallel at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, so about the statistic, I don't know how true this is, and as a result, I should probably not be reporting factoids. But I did hear that someone reckoned that actually the lift is the safest form of transport. So the elevator rather than the airplane. But that can't possibly be true. Anyway, it's obviously not comparable.
Mm.
But you don't get too many deaths in lifts.
No, but, you know, I'll be honest. I keep having these crazy dreams of getting on a lift elevator. All of a sudden I'm going up to the 100th floor of something, but then, you know, I don't make it because all of a sudden it drops and I'm going, going down, 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 down forever. And then it seems like instead of really crashing, it gets to the bottom, you feel a bump, and then it just goes back up. And I don't know where in the world that ever comes from, but yeah, I always have these elevators crashing dreams.
Have you been to, like, Disneyland? Isn't that a ride at Disneyland?
Probably. But, no, I mean, it's like, I can't explain it any better. Just, I keep getting this, you know, I'm going to fall down this elevator, and then boom. It stops, and then it goes back up, and you get off it as quick as you can. But, oh, well.
You have some weird phobias. That's
definitely. Oh, I don't have a problem.
The next thing you're telling me, you're afraid of transporters next, right?
Yeah, I still don't know if I want to use one.
Okay, Lou, you guys deserve another tangent here. And I don't think I haven't mentioned this yet, but one of my least favorite parts of traveling. And obviously, this only occurs when you travel internationally, is, you know, the passport and the customs checks. Mm. It's always such a pain in the backside. And frankly, getting into UK now has become ridiculous. And we're no way capable of having this performed in a normal way. But okay, you obviously land in America, and America, you know, very strict about who they let in and the rest of it. And there's relatively long queues. And you go up to a guy, you know, one of the TSA guys, and these guys aren't generally there for, you know, for a humorous fun time. They're obviously standing there for 10 hours a day or whatever it is, doing a relatively boring job, although important, of course. So, you know, I land in America, my wife and I are there, and they ask us, so, why are you in Vegas? So you go, okay, well, we're in Vegas, you know, we're here on holiday together, we're going to be staying here, we've got, you know, shows, got a convention to go to, lots of fun. And then the wife goes, Star Trek convention. That's where he's going. He's going to the Star Trek convention. And then the TSA guy, not a particular fan of Star Trek. So spent the next like 12 minutes or so, him grinning me about, oh, Star Trek, really? Well, I mean, I thought they were all dead. I mean, what do you mean they're all dead? He said, yeah, they're mostly dead, aren't they? And then I have to convince him that no, both George Takei is still around. Oh no, I don't like George Takei. You know, he says a lot of rubbish, he does, and Shatner's right up his backside, and just coming out with a whole load of stuff that he didn't particularly like about either Shatner, Takei, and he thought those were the only two that were alive. I had to try to convince him that obviously Michelle Nichols was still alive, and Walter Koenig as well.
Yeah.
And he barely accepts Walter Koenig as a cast member of the original series. Anyway, I tried to move it on to the fact that, well, there is also the Next Generation, right? We don't just have the original series. There's Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, and Discovery. He's having none of it.
Really?
Not prepared to acknowledge any of these people as being Star Trek actors. And then starts talking about how Battlestar Galactica is better. Now, for a minute, I'm thinking he's probably talking about the reimagined series that Ronald D. Moore did in, 2003? No. He's talking about the 70s show.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness me.
And that was in London, or?
No, that was in Vegas.
Oh, when you landed or when you left?
When we landed.
Oh, you got another screening to go through when you land, I see.
Yeah. No, I have to, you know, at this point, you know, I would have given up about 4 minutes into this interrogation if it wasn't preventing me getting into the country. I would have happily have turned around. But I've just been on an airplane for like 12 hours and in a queue for another two. So I'm trying my best to slide past this guy and carry on with my day.
Oh man!
But I have no idea why the wife started on the Star Trek convention. Yeah, that's gonna blossom into a wonderful discussion with this miserable sod, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, at least you didn't have to explain the crumpets this time.
No, I didn't have to. No, that's right.
Well, to be fair, it was a coin toss. It could have very easily gone the other way.
Well, I'm gonna so my wife, who's not a Star Trek fan, she reckons that there were other Star Trek fans on the plane with us, and she's rather judgmental and assumes that we all have a certain way of looking and dressing, and she kind of projects this stereotypical nerdy kind of pasty white skin, overweight kind of still living with your parents kind of look. And anyway, she reckons that this guy must have had Trek back to back for the, you know, for the hour or so that he was doing that particular plane. So even if he had started off a Star Trek fan, by the time they'd got through with him, I'm sure that he wouldn't have been that keen to see his 50th Trekkie of the day.
Wow.
Anyway, I got through and I got back, and I can now say bad things about customs.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, that's the important thing. Okay. They didn't refuse you entrance just because you're a Star Trek fan.
Right. Yeah, they could have. It's possible. Anyway, so while he's playing with rocks in 10-4, Barclay has this crazy issue with his arm where it starts to turn blue, and geez, this hurts a lot. So he returns home to discuss transporter psychosis with the computer. And the computer's just giving him all the information. So I guess that's WebMD that he jumped on. And it just, you know, he can relate to every one of these symptoms, including the bad eyesight. That was just hilarious.
No, so he plays this well. And for this being, what was it, 20 years ago? When was this? Longer than 20 years ago.
This would have been 92. Fall of 92.
Okay.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
You got that right.
You know, so in my view, that completely prophesies in, you know, Dr. Google here. You go straight to the computer, you figure out what your symptoms are, you're convinced you're going to die overnight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, this really predates the internet, so.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. It's pretty good foreknowledge.
They knew that Googling your symptoms to be a bad idea back then. That's
Yeah. But they did it anyway. So as Barclay and O'Brien are examining the transporter pad, I noticed the isolinear chips are just kind of like hanging there, which is really, it doesn't mean anything. But I mean, they seem to go into something, but for some reason at that point, they were just kind of like hanging there. So, okay. So even Data noticed that Barclay was having issues. He's checking his pulse rate, checking his visual acuity. And, you know, LaForge probably says, it's Barclay, you know, just let it go. But no, he decides to go and talk with them. Yep. So, you know, says, you know, maybe you just need a little rest. Why don't you go lay down for a little bit while Geordi goes and talks to Troy. So, but when she finds him, he's doing circles in the ship. Am I alone?
Oh, he's just wandering the halls, right?
He's just walking around. Oh, stellar cartography. There it is. I thought it was on deck. And what does she do? Instead of just dealing with them, she relieves him of duty. Really? Because he's out walking around. He's having a little problems. She just relieves him of duty. Could they just do that?
Now I think that... when you've got someone who's slightly unstable, like Barclay is in this circumstance, and you have other things at your disposal to make them feel more calm, which Troy in particular has for Barclay, because she's got like this, Barclay has this, like, at least an infatuation for Troy, and I'm sure will be kind of calmed if she just spoke to him. I think she kind of shuts him down very quickly, and I was surprised that he didn't just completely go off on the deep end here. I was surprised that he calmly accepted that he was going to be relieved of duty, and then, you know, wasn't going to go to the holodeck to try to top himself.
I'm sorry. Did you say top himself?
Okay, it might be an English turn of phrase here, but attempt suicide.
Ah. Can you do that on the holodeck?
Well, Bilana did it. Plenty.
Turn the
safeties off. Yeah. But...
you have to have two ranked officers to be able to approve that, though, right?
I would think so. I mean, even if you turn the safeties off, I think the worst that should happen is, you know, you get hurt. But not die.
Okay, maybe.
Maybe.
Well, but we will look forward to finding out.
Oh, no. I won't even make it to first contact. It sucks. I thought about it. I figured out that I probably would be way too old to make it to first contact, so I'm going to have to die in the next few years so that I can be reborn and then finally make it to first contact.
So when is first contact? Isn't it? It's 63. Yes, it's 63. 2063. So I'll be 83. So I'll be like the. I mean, there's that bearded bloke in the bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
That's you. Yeah, April 5th, 2063, and that will make me 93. And there's no way I'm gonna make it to 93.
I didn't see any 93-year-olds in the bar.
Yeah, no way. I might even be wrong about that. Yeah, no. Well, who knows?
Well, and then you'd have to survive World War III, 600 million dead.
But
in complete fairness, we got through the eugenics wars, so that's good. We're halfway there.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, we did survive that. That's good on us.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll be 94. So then I determined that if I want to be, say, 30 and in aerospace engineering, that I would have to die at approximately... Well, I'd have to be born in 2033, right?
Yep, okay.
So then, depending on how long you go from life to life, it could be any time between now and 2033.
Well, cross your fingers. Here's the one, right?
And then who's...
So the uncertainty here is you dying between now and 2033, the fact that you'll be reincarnated as someone who happens to be the flight test pilot in the fictional future of First Contact. Okay.
There you go. I just want to be around for First Contact. Not the pilot, maybe. Who knows? I might be the Zephyrin Cochrane. But then again, how old was he at the time that happened?
Oh, he's probably 60.
So now we have to try. I have to do some more math to try and figure out when he was born, and then
Zephyrin Cochrane is probably already alive. He's probably a 5-year-old now.
Ah, there
Maybe
you go.
Even older.
You missed it, Lou. Sorry.
Dang it. Okay.
If only you'd had this realization 6 years ago.
Yeah, you're right. He would have been born in 2003, so he's about 5 years old. So I need to find someone. Do you think maybe somebody's 15. Already done this?
He'd have been 15 if he was born in 2003.
Yeah, you're right. 15 years old. So do you think somebody may have already done that? No, because we didn't know when First Contact was, did we? 15 years ago? 20 years ago? Yeah. When did First Contact come out?
Isn't it 98?
96.
Oh, okay.
There you go. So somebody had a few years to conceive this idea and come up with Zephyrin Cochrane. Oh, that'd been hilarious. There's somewhere out there, there has to be a Zephyrin Cochrane who's
I was just wondering that. I almost want to Google it and see if there's a record out there. Wow, we are way up there on the wire now, aren't we?
There we go. I went in.
If your surname was Cochrane, though, and you're a Star Trek fan,
are you guys still there?
You're going to have a baby. Yeah, yeah. It's a natural name, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know a guy named Cochrane. But here's the thing. I just did a Google search. It says Zephyrin Cochrane was born in 2032.
So he was 30 at the time.
Yeah, yeah. That
Third World War was black. No, that was harsh, wasn't it?
Of course it was. It was terrible. I didn't mean how old was the guy who played him. I mean, how old is he supposed to be? He was approximately 31 years old in 2063. So now you know someone has 14 years now to come up with this plan. And now that they've heard us talk about it, now we know someone named Cochrane is actually going to do this in 14 years. I still don't know if I'm going to be around for it.
I'm not prepared to accept that Zephyrin Cochrane in First Contact was 30-odd years old.
That's according to Reddit. I think you're right.
The war was tough.
Yeah, I just saw this. Radiation is a bee. Working in the sun is a bee. Alcohol dependency is a bee. Substance dependency is a bee. World War II record errors are filled with inconsistency. So your World War III record errors are filled with inconsistency. So you're right. There's no way he would be 31. That's absolutely insane. Anyway, so let's see here. Barclay returns home to the soundtrack of Oceans and Birds. And what does he want? More birds. Did he really think more birds would... less stressful.
I love this so much because, so I think I mentioned before. I mean, I grew up on a seaside town. We had seagulls, and the idea of peaceful birds is one thing, but the idea that you come across a lot as well is that these birds, they come after you, especially if you're walking down on the beach with chips, and they don't let go. So I love this, the idea of the attacking gulls when he asks for, like, soothing bird sounds. was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It just makes things worse. So he decides to go to bed, this time with something soothing like music and a few taps behind his ear. But instead of sleeping, what's he get? He gets more arm pain. Yep, he can't sleep, so...
See, he kind of jumped out of bed as if he had like a...
And a nice blue sheen, doesn't he?
Yep. So he gets out of bed and he wakes up O'Brien and he orders him to come to the transporter and, you know, let him transport over, let's bring him back. Because he's going to bring a tricorder, but of course he forgot the tricorder. And he just wants to know, is he imagining this, or he has to know for himself. So he does, and sure enough, same thing happens again, doesn't it?
So I like how O'Brien behaves here, because, you know, he knows that that he's been pulled along by Barkley, but he's a nice guy that will wake up early, will come over, will hear him out, and he'll do his job, you know, professionally, and he's not gonna shout at Barkley or report him. So he comes across as a really nice guy here.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. O'Brien is always a nice guy, though. But do you get the... Have you ever really heard Cole Meany talk, or... Is he like O'Brien? Anything like O'Brien, or?
Well, I mean, they share the same body.
Personality-wise, I've seen some of the other roles he's done, and he is nothing like O'Brien. But
oh no,
as a person himself, I'm really not sure what his personality's like.
You know, Matt, did you ever get into that movie Life on Mars? Our U.S. version of it?
No, it's on the to-do list.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, you should look it up. Life on Mars. It came from the BBC. And when they decided to do an American version of it, they actually had Cole Meany as lieutenant in the police squad. And he was real interesting there, because he was just beating everybody up and... You know, even punching his own detectives or inspectors for James. It's an interesting version, and I even found the BBC version of it and watched it as well. And it's amazing. The BBC version and the US version is pretty different. However, the cases are pretty much all the same. Hmm. It's just different styles of what they do there versus what we do here. And, you know, investigative work and police procedures over there is a whole lot different than over here. But it's really an interesting show. And maybe I'll somehow figure out a way to get it to you. Because I loved Life on Mars. Yeah, but again, I like Mrs. Brown's Boys, and nobody over there does.
When you say over here, you mean in England?
Yeah, from what I understand.
No, it's very popular here. I mean, they keep making new episodes and new specials, so it can't be that unpopular.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious. But you don't like it, though.
No, I think it's fine.
Oh. Okay. For some reason, I remember thinking you didn't like it. But anyway.
Okay. I'm curious about Barkley's plan. What would a tricorder record during transport?
Yeah, that's also a good point, because again, that telling you that you get turned into a data stream and sent across, but you're going to have a fully functional tricorder, and you'd pick up things from the physical world. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay, so after he does his little test and he sees the images again, he calls for an emergency conference. It's probably like 3 in the morning now, and, you know, Picard loves getting up at 3 in the morning.
Oh, he doesn't call it. He tells O'Brien to call it.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Wake the senior staff. We need to discuss this now. And Picard orders a transporter offline and sends Barkley for a few more tests. And so you know, one of the things is the armband. She puts the armband on him and says, this will let me know if there's anything happening. So when he goes back to engineering and beams aboard a sample of the plasma, and while they're doing tests, it explodes. The whole thing explodes, and Geordi's picking up biomagnetic energy in the plasma and thinks they might actually be alive. And, oh, what the hell happened to Barclay? I mean, he's passed out over there. And do you think Crusher even received a signal?
I don't know.
Because it never seems to work that way.
I loved this part because they suspected that something like this had exploded on the other ship. So they bring it onto the Enterprise in engineering.
Mm-hmm. Next to the warp core.
Next to the warp core. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I mean, well, let's not put it in a shuttle or something.
Yeah, and Geordi has the line. He specifically says, oh, can we, you know, we're going to be extra safe here. Can I have a level 5 force field? And you kind of think, extra safe wouldn't be putting it next to the warp core with a level 5 force field. I mean, at least level 6. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Geordi.
We know it goes up to level 10 at least. So, you know, it's spring for a little extra power here. Come on.
Absolutely, yes. I would like to know the levels of force fields. Level 1, level 10. What's the difference between level 1 and level 10? It's thicker? But anyway. So
they always deal with the explosives right next to the warp core. I just never understood that.
Yes, they always do. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Or like when they were shooting phasers, to test phasers, they do it next to the warp core.
But even away from the fact that they're doing it in a really stupid place, right? They have a ship that all life has disappeared from. They reckon that moments before that happened, the other ship can, like, poke these things that appear to be alive. And they're going to repeat it? I mean, it's just stupid. Why would they do this? It just sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Who knows?
Anyway. Okay,
so anyway, they now believe there are microbes in the Enterprise buffer stream. They're just floating around in there, and guess what? They're also in Barclay as well. So the plan is to re-enter the buffer and remove them from Barclay. You know, by suspending me? I don't like the sound of that. Yeah, of course not. Yeah, we're going to suspend him in this stream, and he's going to have to live with it for a while. And so they do. They put him in. He's suspended pending a final investigation. But he sees an object moving around. And as they begin to bring him back, he notices more of them. And so he just decided to grab one. Where in the world did this come from? Why would he all of a sudden just grab one?
Well, he mentioned it later that he must have thought that the other guys were doing the same, but... Yeah, no, if I'm in the math stream and I ain't grabbing anyone.
Mm-mm. No. So he sits in the stream, and it looks like while they suspend him in the stream, he's actually seeing Geordi and O'Brien work. But yep. He's just sitting there waiting. His pattern is degrading as he's watching them degrade his pattern, and he can't do a thing about it, I suppose. Or could they see him?
Well, why does the pattern degrade? I don't get why the pattern would degrade. And also, if it's a digital signal, why does the pattern degrade? I mean, the pattern shouldn't degrade coming slowly. It should be kind of like either perfect or broken. So, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's transporter technology. It does what it needs to do.
Yeah, all right. It gets you from point A to point B. But while everything was going, his pattern is degrading. They're shunting him to this and shunting him to that and bringing it. All of a sudden, he has this object stand in front of him, just floating in front of him. And I don't know, maybe it made a winking motion. It winked at him, and he decided, oh, man, that might be a person. I'm going to grab him. And so he does. He grabs a hold of him and holds on tight. And he beams aboard someone else. A person. So that's when they've realized what's in the transporter beam. So they send a few people who have no idea what's going on. They're just going to go in there and grab them. Could you do that? Just do what you're told?
Yeah.
Just go in there. You're going to see some things floating. Grab them and bring them home. We're going to do what? Could you tell me a little more? A little more, please? Nope, they just do it. Okay. So anyway, everyone has been safe. They removed 3 crew members from the Yosemite. Or was that 4 altogether or something? I don't know. And good job, O'Brien. Now, next time we see O'Brien, isn't it going to be everybody thinks he's crazy? Especially in Voyager. Did you notice he's got to fight for everything he believes in?
Barclay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Barclay character gets reset pretty much after every episode we have with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
He overcomes his obstacles, whether it's, you know, the social anxiety that he has in the nth degree, and, you know, the hiding in the holodeck, or here the transporter psychosis, and it kind of all, you know, obviously he doesn't have transporter issues again, but he gets almost reset in many cases.
Yeah. I mean, he saves the day. If they would have just listened to him from the start, everything would have worked out a lot better. And they know this, so then next time we see Barclay, they go back to the Barclay. You're fantasizing again. What do we need to do to get you to stop doing this? And, of course, he has to go off the reservation and force them to let him do what he wants to do. But anyway, the last thing we've got to do is talk about Christina. She's his tarantula spider. And, hey, I'm going to go get a drink while you just kind of, like, visit Christina for a while. And then it starts to walk up Reg's arm and...
I wouldn't enjoy this at all.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have been fun. Well, it depends. I mean, is she toxic? Could she bite him or something? Or
I don't know, spiders, I don't like them very much. In particular, you know the thing at the behind their main body bit, the bit that's like, you know, it looks like the backside, but it's like obviously not, but inflated. It always freaks me out that it's so big. It always feels like it's where they keep all their poison. I'm sure it's not true, but it's... I don't like spiders. Oh, and by the way, to be clear here, spiders in the UK are about, you know, anywhere between a centimetre, you know, so half an inch to 3/4 of an inch. That's the spiders that we deal with, and I don't like them. So anything that's a good half a foot or whatever that tarantula was is an absolute no-no.
Mm-mm. Yeah, no thank you. No, thanks. All right, so, of course, they end the show. So we don't know what happened, if he crawled up into his ear and made him start telling the truth or anything like that. So,
but the next time we see Barclay, he's had a bit of a fusion with Christina.
Oh, yeah.
If you recall.
Yeah. Do we really got to do that one? Can we just skip it?
I love that one.
Now, I don't know about that. Okay. We'll argue about it later. So I guess now it's going to be time, since it's after midnight or where you are, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this one on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best they have to offer. Matt, why don't you go first, see if you remember what you said and what your ratings were. As a matter of fact, I need to pull the spreadsheet our ratings were.
Okay, so Lou, you do have the spreadsheet, because if you do have the spreadsheet from when we spoke last, I think it would be I want to land where I landed before, but I can't quite remember where I landed before. The other thing that unfortunately you have not noticed, but I'm afraid Matt dropped off around 5 minutes ago.
What?
He fell off. He's emailed. He's had a couple of connection issues, obviously, on the call so far. So he is offline at the moment.
Oh, no. Okay, well, we'll just hold off a bit if we can. Is he trying to get back on, or did he say?
He did email over. He stated he's just lost connection.
Oh, I see that now.
But Lou, let me guess what I want to guess where I landed. Type, 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 type.
Yeah, I'm sending him a response asking if he's gonna try to reconnect or if we should just go on. Okay, well then you give yours first.
Okay, so I remember coming into this episode on the previous discussion that we had, relatively negative, and I do think that a lot of the stuff here is relatively kind of it's a relatively trivial episode. I don't think anything huge really happens. I think the premise they get into is a little bit silly. I think that the Barclays character gets reset too often, so there's no real kind of permanent growth that goes on. But at the same time, you know, Barclay is always great. He does what he needs to do in a similar way that Laxana Troy is always great. She does what she needs to do. And, you know, I would enjoy the episode for what it is. I think that the performances are good. I like the, you know, it's an enjoyable, albeit kind of like relatively throwaway kind of like episode of Trek in my mind. I will come down as a very solid like 3 out of 5 on that. And I think that's what I gave it last time, Lou.
That is. That is what you gave it last time.
But I remember last time I was going to come in lower, and I enjoyed our conversation, so I landed higher than expected. And also, unfortunately, because of that conversation, I recall that you were coming in higher, and you landed lower than you were going to land because, you know, although I take positivity from you guys seem to take a bit of negativity from me, for which I apologize.
Hmm. I don't remember that, but I like this one quite a bit. You know, it's hard to give a Barclay story anything less than 4, I'll be honest with you. So that's where I'm at. I'm at a 4 with this. So it just wouldn't be right. But the story is actually pretty good. It deals with the transporter psychosis and, you know, and the tech explanation of it. And it even saves the day for 4 crew members of the Yosemite. So, very brief. I like this one. And, you know, it's interesting to see what they face with their fears. Because they've got to have other fears, too. I mean, they're in a profession where they could just die in it suddenly. You know, one lucky shot from a ramen and then poof. And over 1,000 people, including their families, are all dead. And since that happens a lot in space, I find it hard to call Star Trek a really optimistic view of the future sometimes. You hear that a lot. Star Trek is an optimistic view of the future. Well, when you consider that everybody wants to kill us, I'm not exactly sure that's true. It's a very dangerous place to be in the future. So, I don't know.
I mean, it might be dangerous, but I don't think dangerous necessarily means that it's not optimistic. I think that, you know, it's not a utopia. It's not a paradise in which you sit, although they will often describe Earth itself as the paradise. I think from Trek's perspective, they usually will show characters, you know, on the adventure, and they don't show the characters, right, that are having a nervous breakdown because the Borg attacked and they wiped out their family. So, you know, that's what they generally focus on.
Okay.
And I think we got Matt back.
Did we?
We do. Well, he is at least online if he has not been added to the call.
Okay, let's see what I can do here. Should I call you?
Yeah, we can. I think we can add him. Are you adding? How about that?
If you know how to do it, because
yeah, I can add
this new version. I used to just be able to click his name and then say add to the call, but I can't figure it out now.
Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yes, oh, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
You were gone for about 5 minutes till he's mentioned it.
But we had good flow, Lou. We had good flow.
Yeah, I guess. And you know, sometimes they just stay quiet and let us continue. But that's, I thought, okay.
No, my computer just completely decided it didn't want to connect to the internet anymore, so I'm calling you from my phone now.
I was going to say, boy, it sounds better, too. Anyway, so we gave our ratings and our final things, our final thoughts and ratings, and he came in at a 3, I came in at a 4. Let's see if you remember yours.
Oh, is that, let's see, how did I wrap it up last time? I remembered I was going to rank it higher, but then Doc had talked me down on it a little bit.
See, Lou, we had this discussion literally minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said before, I have a new appreciation for the Barkley episodes now, having, you know, going back and watching them now that I'm, you know, not 12 anymore. So I liked them a little bit more than I used to. This one I thought had a good message in terms of facing your fears, and you know, there was a lot of parallels with, like I said before, about, you know, with air travel and, you know, people having phobias of that. But you know, as technology evolves, we're going to have these different modes of transportation that, you know, people are just going to have to get on board with at some point, I guess.
Yeah.
but I do agree with Doc that, you know, as Barkley episodes go, this one was a little bit more on the weaker side. It's not the worst of the Barkley episodes. You know, that is yet to come, I think. But you know, it wasn't bad either. So, I was gonna give it a 4 initially, but I think I ultimately landed down on a 3.5.
Yeah, you're right. 3.5.
I think you should give it a 4.
Well, like I said, you know, it was a good, it was a decent episode, but, you know, it's a middle of the road episode for me. It's not one of those fantastic ones that I always go back to. You know, but it's also not one that I'm going to turn off if it ever came on. So, you know,
that's fine. All right, then. That's pretty cool, guys. Same things. And so, all right, everybody. So, Matt, thanks for coming on again.
Yes, thank you.
Nice of you.
Oh, anytime.
And the only thing I have you completely verified for sure is for the quality of life. But we'll be looking at another episode on getting you on that you kind of asked if possible.
Right. I think I'm also down for I think I'm also down for second chances towards the end, aren't I?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Okay.
Yeah. But as far as the next one you're coming on for,
the next
quality of life. But I'm hoping that, you know, we'll get you on for Rolex.
So, Lou, what's the next opening that we have? Should we encourage the listeners, if anyone does want to come on and discuss, to put their names forward?
Right now, the only one open that I have for sure that I don't have a possible is True Q, and that will be episode 6.
I like True Q.
Oh, I do too, actually. Oh, if it's open, I'll take it.
Okay. So perfect. If not, we'll see you then.
Counselor Troy falls prey to an alien's seductive powers.
Strength comes from love.
I have no intention of releasing her now or ever.
And a startling metamorphosis releases jealous rage.
I need you. Deanna's condition is deteriorating rapidly.
Will Troy pay the ultimate price for unbridled passion?
Counselor Troy is dying.
Next time on Star Trek: The Next Generation.
All right, everybody, so join us next week as we review episode 3, which is called Man of the People.
Oof. And, oof.
Yeah. He likes it. He likes it. Hey, Mikey. Okay,
we'll see. Who are you torturing on that one?
I don't know. I believe it was Chris, but it's kind of one of those... That's why I didn't... I don't have anything in here, but I know I had somebody down for it, so I'm going to have to do a lot of investigating to see. But I think we were possibly Chris Johnson. But anyway. All right, guys. Well, you take care, everyone, and good night, please.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Ski.